Good morning, Reality Church. How are you guys doing today? You doing all right? Yeah, I guess you're doing all right, huh? How about those last 17 seconds? We won't talk about that today, but that was pretty awesome. Welcome to Reality Church. My name is Lance Birch. I'm one of the pastors here. This may be your first time. If it is, I want you to know from up front that we're so glad you made the choice to be with us this morning. I know you could be a lot of different places, so we're glad you're here. We are on part 7 of a series called Follow. So if you missed the first 6, you might want to go back and binge watch those sermons just on a lazy Saturday afternoon. People do that, I'm sure, binge watch sermons, don't they? Okay, whatever. All of these are going to be online, and that's going to be important today because about halfway through this sermon, many of you guys are going to be saying to yourselves, I wish my boss was here today. No kidding. And so maybe you can just shoot an email to him and say, hey, this might be something you might want to check out. Or if you are the boss, about midway through, you might be saying, I need to call a conference this week and maybe apologize for some things, maybe change some things. So that's kind of where we're going today, because today we're talking about leadership. And I know that might sound weird that you're coming to church and you're hearing a sermon, really, about leadership, because when people think of church, you don't normally think of leadership, all right? Leadership is what the business world does. It's painting a picture of a preferred future. It's saying, okay, let's have the courage to face current reality. This is where we're at, and here's where we want to get to, and here's how we're going to get there. We're going to have strategy, and we're going to have tactics, and we're going to do this. But when people think of church, they think of what has been. And really, who cares? It's actually about preserving what used to be, maybe even trying to turn back time a little bit, back to when things used to be a whole lot better. It's really not about leadership. And that's what people think anyway. But you and I follow the best leader in the world. We follow the absolute best leader that has ever existed in Jesus Christ. If you think about that, think about his leadership skill. This is what he did. And he launched his global enterprise in 3 years and has hundreds of thousands of franchises all over the world without racking up a single frequent flyer mile. That's what Jesus did. That's pretty impressive. He launched his brand, and now everybody knows it. He's got outpost everywhere around the world that's making a difference in people's lives, and he never really traveled maybe more than 25 miles out of his own hometown. That's astounding. So we follow the best leader that exists. So when we're talking about leadership, I think we ought to look to the best leader that ever existed. Now, he had some followers too, and they sometimes didn't get it. Sometimes his followers were immature. They were nothing like you and me. They thought of themselves. They were selfish. Nothing like us. But they didn't get it all the time. And so they would have arguments. I don't know if you guys knew this, about the organizational chart. They knew that Jesus was number one. He's the leader. But they had arguments about who's number two. Who's this person that's on his right hand and on his left hand? And that sort of stuff happened a lot. Because they didn't get it. They thought Jesus was going to be this big ruler and they were going to rule with him. He was the man and they were going to be the men with the man. And that was good for them. But they would have these kind of discussions. And even up until the very last, I'm talking about they've been with Jesus for 3 years. And they've seen everything that he did. And yet, they still in some ways didn't get it. So today, Jesus, in this story in Mark chapter 10, if you got your Bibles, turn to Mark chapter 10. That's where we're going to be. So open those up to Mark 10 or pull it up on your device or look up here on the screen, whatever you want to do. But they're having this kind of discussion. This is the week leading into Jesus' death on the cross. They're all walking toward Jerusalem, and the disciples have their mind on other things. Jesus has just done this amazing thing, which we're not really going to get into. Here we start in Mark 10:32. So they were now on their way up to Jerusalem. And Jesus was walking ahead of them. He was kind of walking alone because, again, I say, this is the week that Jesus is going to be crucified and Jesus knows it. So he's sort of walking ahead of them, walking alone. And the disciples were filled with awe about something Jesus just did. And the people who were following further back were filled with fear. And then taking the 12 disciples aside, Jesus, so get the picture. Jesus says, okay, everybody, let's stop for a second because he's been thinking about what's about to happen. He's going to be turned over. All this bad stuff is going to happen. It's been good up until now, but it's about to go bad. And he calls his disciples over And he has this talk with them. He says, listen, here's what's going to go down. He once more, and that's important because he tries to do this a lot, he once more began to describe everything that was about to happen to him. If you guys have been following the Follow series, you know that from time to time, Jesus will talk to them and he'll say, it's been good, we've been popular, a lot of people love us, and it's been awesome, but it's about to get not so good. It's about to turn south on us, and I want you guys to know, it's really important for you to know before this happens. I want to prepare your hearts. I want to prepare your minds so that you'll know what's coming. So he tells them exactly what's coming. He says, look, I have this. I can't wait for someone back there to do it. I can just sit here and hope, or else I can push this button. Listen, he said, we're going to Jerusalem, where the Son of Man will be betrayed to the leading priests and the teachers of religious law. I'm going to be betrayed. They've heard this before. He goes into more detail. They will sentence him. He's talking about himself in the third person. They will sentence him to die and hand him over to the Romans. Your Bible might say Gentiles. It's basically Romans. They will mock him, spit on him, flog him with a whip, and kill him. But after 3 days, he will rise again. Look at the picture. Jesus is on his way to Jerusalem. He's pulling his closest followers aside, and he's saying, this is what's about to happen. It's been good, but it's going to go bad. And you guys need to know. It's one of those moments that's just, it's a tender moment where he's really getting real with them, and he's saying, this is what I'm facing. This is what you're facing. If you're following me, this is what you're about to face. It's going to get really, really bad. Looking them in the eye, I know it was an emotional talk. Over on the side of the road, he couldn't just keep on walking. He had to let them know, let them in on what's going on. They will mock him, spit on him, flog him, and kill him. And after that, and then, right after that, and that's the Bible word then means what happened next. Okay? That's for free. Then, James and John, the sons of Zebedee, came over and spoke to him. And they said, so this is right after this moment, pregnant with emotion and pregnant with tension, just this moment. And James and John say, Jesus, come over here for a sec. Can you do us a favor? What? Have you ever had one of these moments with your kids? I love those moments with your kids where you're like having one of those really intense, deep discussions. If our kids didn't want to go to bed at night, instead they would come to our bedroom and they would just like talk about anything. And Amy and I would... they knew that if they did that, they didn't have to go to bed because we loved it. So we'd talk about everything, just random stuff. And then usually those talks kind of got down to the level of me as a dad wanting to, you know, put some words into their life. And I would say stuff like, you know, your dad's proud of you, that I believe in you, that I'm always going to be here for you. As long as I'm alive, I'm going to be here for you. I'm on your side. You know that stuff, right? And it meant a lot to me that to get those words in there. And then after all that, you know, moment where there ought to be background music in those moments, right? This ought to be on Hallmark or some Lifetime or something. No, not Lifetime. That's where I'd pull out a bat and just go crazy on the house. But Hallmark, those, it's just like, oh, wow, this is so sweet. And usually after that moment, I would say, now, guys, you got anything you want to say? You got any questions? And someone would say, yeah, can we get a snack or can we go upstairs or something? It's like, what just happened? That's what happened to Jesus here. There's this incredible moment. James and John says, yeah, okay, could you do us a favor? Hey, sorry about all the mocking, spitting, flogging, dying stuff. Could you do us a favor? And Jesus says, you know, in response to that, he doesn't say, how could you guys do this to me? He says, well, what's your request? All kinds of grace in this moment. What's your request? They replied, when you sit on your glorious throne, I mean, when you come into your kingdom, you know, after all the flogging and the dying thing, when you become king, because we know you're going to be king, we want to sit in the places of honor next to you, one on your right and one on your left. Wow. That's like that moment that we have with people that just don't get it. James and John just totally missed it, and they're saying, yeah, but... but come on, Jesus, you're going to rule, and we know it, and all that stuff. We want to rule with you. And we know that you're the man, but can we be the guys with the guy? You know, can we rule with you? Because we really like that idea. We believe in you. And Jesus basically says to them, you don't know what you're asking. When I come into my kingdom, you're not going to want to be on my right and left. Ironically enough, you guys know when Jesus came to his kingdom, there was somebody on his right and his left, weren't there? There were two thieves and they were dying. And so when he showed himself for who he is, there were some people on his right and left. And Jesus says to them, you don't even know what you're asking. You don't want that. Can you drink the cup that I'm about to drink? And they say, oh yeah, we can do it. He says, oh, you will, but not as soon as you think you are, but you're going to. So basically, they're having that conversation, Jesus with his 12, and then James and John bring him over here, so there's like a subgroup. But somebody in the disciples overheard this conversation. Oh, and it didn't go well. They overheard that James and John were asking to be on the right and left. Listen, this is what happened. When the 10 other disciples heard what James and John had asked, they were indignant. They were very, very angry. But don't think they were angry for Jesus. They weren't over there going, did you hear what they just asked? After that emotional time with Jesus, after he tells us he's going to be killed and then he's going to rise again, can you believe they're thinking about themselves and not Jesus? No, guys, they weren't mad for Jesus. They were mad the same way that you're mad when somebody else takes the last donut or when somebody else gets the promotion and you don't. They were mad for themselves. Their anger was all about, I don't want to be left out. They're over there talking about who's going to be on his right. And his left. They don't deserve that. Has anyone ever gotten a promotion in your work and you deserved it? You know, at least in your mind, you deserved it and they didn't. And you're like, they got it and I didn't. The disciples were thinking that. They were mad because James and John beat them to it. They didn't have the guts to ask what James and John were asking. And so they were mad, furious at them. And Jesus knew it. Jesus has situational awareness at all times, so he knows what's going on. And he pulls everybody aside together again. He says, let's all go to the conference room. I've got something that you guys need to know. And think about this. He's on his way to die, and they're arguing about who's number one, number two, number three. And he says, so he called them together, and he says, you know that the rulers in this world lord it over their people, and the officials flaunt their authority over those under them. Basically, he uses two different Greek words here for kind of lord over or boss people around. The second one is sort of like abusing their authority. Maybe you've had a boss like that in your life that just existed there to rule over you, to boss you around, to tell you what time it is. They're the kind of guys that come to your cubicle and say, yeah, you know, if you just come in a few minutes early tomorrow, you know, that'd be great. That guy, you know. And the disciples are listening to this, and they're saying, yeah, we know that. We know that that's the way being a ruler goes. That's why we want to be rulers. Because we want to rule over people, Jesus. Yeah, we get it. Absolutely. We know that this is the way it works. You lord it over people. You flaunt your authority. You know, people carry you in your chair while you're sitting around. That's what we want. You're going to be king. We can't be the king, but we can be the guys with the king. So Jesus is saying to them, there's this way that everybody thinks that leadership goes. There's this way that everybody thinks that ruling people goes. And it's the popular belief. But, and this is important, he says, there's you as the leader, there's you as the big guy, the boss, and everybody exists in your corporation, in your business, everybody in this company or this nonprofit or this church exists for you. That's the way that everybody views, that's top-down leadership. You got the point person and everybody under them. And so they get that, and that feels good, that feels right for them. And Jesus says, but among you, it will be different. But among you, it will be different. We're going to do things differently. I'm going to introduce you to something that doesn't look like what you think of when you think of leadership. And the reason this is important for all of us is because we've got an idea of what being the big boss is. And that's why Jesus' teaching are so practical. That's why they matter for us. Because if we think that everyone is for us, then it's going to affect the way we treat everybody. If everybody is our supporting cast to launch our career, then it's going to affect the way we treat them. I was on staff at a church as a youth pastor, youth director, I think is what they called me. And I just directed youth. You go there, you go there. And so that's kind of a joke. But I was there for 2 years, and I hadn't gotten any compliments from him at all. It was just kind of treading water, not knowing how he felt about me. And then we had a deacon and wives Christmas party. And I was supposed to be there so that he could introduce me to the deacons and their wives and talk a little bit about me. And I thought, oh, I was so hungry for a compliment. And I know that's sort of pathetic, but I was. And I thought, maybe this is the day because the youth ministry has grown and people are coming and people are excited. Parents are excited. So this is the day. And he introduced all the staff, and this is how he introduced me. This is Lance Birch. You guys know that he's our youth director, and he hasn't caused any really big problems so far. That was it. That was my intro. Listen, there's a way that we think about organizational life is like, your job is to not cause me any problems. You exist for me, okay? And Jesus is saying, no, among you it will be different. And if you're a Jesus follower in this room, this is important for you because the kingdom of God exists outside of these walls. It exists where you work. It's, let's connect Sunday to Monday, okay? But among you, it will be different. Whoever wants to be a leader among you, and they're all thinking, yeah, we just told you we did. All of us are mad about it. We want the penthouse office. We want, you know, we want the sweet parking spot. We want the nameplate. We want, you know, the executive suite. We want that stuff. We want the authority. If anyone among you wants to be the leader, if you want that, then you must be the servant. And whoever wants to be first among you must be the slave of everyone else. Jesus takes that pyramid shape and he flips it. He turns it upside down. The reason this is important for you guys is that you live in this world where some people believe that leadership is about intimidation and ruling by fear and manipulation. We actually looked around for maybe a movie clip that would illustrate that kind of environment where it's permeated by fear and manipulation and insecurity for your job and everything else. Maybe you live there. Maybe it looks a little bit something like this. Take a look at this.
Why it's so difficult to confirm appointments.
No, I'm so sorry, Miranda. I actually did confirm last night.
The details of your incompetence do not interest me. Tell Simone I'm not going to prove that girl that she sent me for the Brazilian layout. I asked for clean, athletic, smiling. She sent me dirty, tired, and paunchy. An RSVP yes to the Michael Kors party. I want the driver to drop me off at 9:30 and pick me up at 9:45 sharp. Then call Natalie at Gloria's Foods and tell her no for the 40th time. No, I don't want duckwise. I want torts filled with warm rhubarb compote. And then call my ex-husband and remind him that parent-teacher conference is at Daltner tonight. And then call my husband. Ask him to please meet me for dinner at that place I went to with Massimo. Also, tell Richard I saw all the pictures that he sent for that feature on the female paratroopers. And they're all so deeply unattractive. Is it impossible to find a lovely, slender female paratrooper?
No.
Am I reaching for the stars here?
No.
Not really. Also, I need to see all the things that Nigel has pulled for Gwyneth's second cover try. I wonder if she's lost any of that weight yet. Who is that?
Nobody. Human Resources sent her up about the new assistant job, and I was sort of pre-interviewing her for you, but she's hopeless and totally
wrong.
Well,
clearly, I'm going to have to do that myself, because the last two you sent me were completely inadequate, so sent her in. That's all.
Right.
Wow. I don't know if you've had anyone like that or you've been someone like that in your life. But the disciples at this point were thinking, maybe that's what it was all about. And Jesus is saying, that's not it at all. Now, and I know maybe what you're thinking, because Lance, that works in church world, all right? We get it. But we live in the real world. We live in the business world. And listen, here's what I think. I think that this plugs in so well into what you're doing every day, because we're responsible for following Jesus every day of the week, and his leadership style actually works. And it's not that leaders should walk around. You're like, can we get anything done if the leader actually serves everyone? I'm not talking about, and I don't think Jesus was talking about you standing at the door and holding it for everybody who works there. Like, you know, you first, you know, have a towel on your arm and serve everybody. Listen, Jesus didn't serve that way all the time. He was a leader, and he got more accomplished than any of us would or ever could. So that can't be his clip. I mean, that can't be his meaning. It's got to be something a little bit different than that. He didn't operate that way. But here's what his point is. We should, leverage our authority for the benefit of those under our authority. That's what you and I should do. If you've got any authority, we should leverage that authority to benefit the people who kind of work for us. Can you imagine having a boss that way, or being a boss that did that? We're responsible for following Jesus into our offices. We're responsible for following Jesus and his leadership style even in our daily lives. We need to connect what we believe on Sunday with how we behave on Monday. Jesus gave us the best way to lead. And here's my promise to you. If you do that, you will create a more productive, more unified, more fun work environment than you could ever believe. And here's why. As the leader, if you believe that I'm here for me, then you better be on the lookout for you. Have you ever been in an organization where the leader was there for themselves and you knew it? And so you knew that you better watch your back. You better look around, because everybody in that organization, everybody in that nonprofit, everybody in that church was out for themselves. And that's a very insecure environment. It's not fun. It's not productive. It's not nimble. It's really, and the only reason people work in this environment is because they can't afford to quit. They're literally there kind of just biding their time. But imagine a place. Imagine having a place where you could go every day, and this is what it looks like. If you believe that I'm for you, then you can be for the people who report to you. You're freed up. If you know that someone's got your back, if you know that someone loves you and serves you and looks out for you and leverages their authority for your benefit, then you can do the same for the people who report to you. That's what Jesus is talking about here. And that's why, you know, it might sound like a leadership seminar here, but listen, this is actually a very practical, spiritual sermon that works its way into your life tomorrow. If you believe that I'm for you, you can be for the people that who report to you. And that's the kingdom of God breaking into your workplace. That's the reality of God's kingdom breaking into where you live most of the time, right? So, let me go back. So people write all sorts of books on leadership. You guys know that. I'm kind of a leadership junkie. You might be surprised about that, because I'm a pastor, and he's like, pastors aren't leaders. And to you, I'm maybe the preacher, and I, you know, like my dad, he calls me up and says, son, how's it to work one day a week? That's what he says to me. That's his line that he always tells me. But you guys might not know this, but I actually spend most of my time being a leader. And I'm a boss. I boss people around. You know, that's what I do. Ask them. And I love working with them. But I love reading. I listen to podcasts. I read leadership blogs. I read leadership books. And people have been writing about this stuff. It's not new. And they usually recycle old ideas with a new metaphor. But I read them. And one of the books was called Good to Great. Came out a few years ago by a guy named Jim Collins. And he talked in that book about level 5 leaders. The leaders that just knock it out of the park. The leaders that take their companies from a really good position to a great position in the economy and in their marketplace and their market share. And how did they get there? And as a researcher, he kind of assumed that he knew the answer before he went into it. He kind of assumed that the answer had to be because he knew that if all of these leaders could build a great company, there had to be something in common. And he thought it was this: charisma. You know those people that are just, they're infectious. You've just got to be around them. They make everybody, they just kind of mesmerize a crowd. They're magnetic and you just have to scoot up next to them, and they've got this clear vision for where they're going and you want to be a part of it, and you're willing to give everything in you to make what they see happen. And he assumed that charisma was the thing that linked all of these leaders together. Interestingly enough, as he studied the stories and he interviewed these guys, he interviewed the people who reported to them, which was really important, he found that the characteristic that united them was humility. Humility united these guys. And not the kind of maybe humility that you think of where they just like, oh, I can't do anything. No, it was actually something that looked a little bit different. They actually saw themselves clearly enough to hire people around them that would augment their weaknesses. And they saw themselves clearly enough to know that they were not actually better than anyone else in their organization. They might not even be the best leader in their organization. They just got there first. There might be smarter people, more driven people, and they were humble enough to know that and yet still accomplish what they were supposed to accomplish. Frank Blake took over Home Depot. And it was kind of a mess when he took it over. They had really departed from their core values. And Frank Blake changed the system. Remember the triangle we looked at? He kind of came up with this concept. He borrowed it from some other people like we all do in leadership. But he called it the inverted triangle. If you're the leader, if you're the point leader of an organization, you're on the bottom of the ladder. You're on the bottom rung. And everybody else in that organization is kind of the people that you serve. And look at it this way: the weight of the organization rests on you. And so you serve up all the people. And who are these people in our church? Right here, it's the people who are attending. And right here, it's the volunteers. And that's who we serve. That's why, you know, and Frank Blake, by the way, Home Depot ran thousands of employees, would sit down on Sunday and write 100 thank you notes. Not to his direct reports, but to people who were out there frontlining it. They were the people who were the customer service people. They were the associates. And it became a myth, a legend. You know, like people didn't even really believe it. He visited a Home Depot one time, and a guy came up to him and said, "Listen, you wrote me a thank you note about a month ago. Could you rewrite that thank you note for me, like in my presence?" And this, he's talking to the CEO of his company, and Frank says, "Yeah, sure, but why?" And he said, "Well," and he showed him the note, and it was blank. And he said, "My wife didn't believe that this was real, and so in order to prove it to her, I kind of soaked this in water, and the ink bled off, and now it's nothing. Could you write it?" And it was at that moment that Frank thought, okay, this means something. Now, we've got a rock star thank you card writer in our church, on our staff. And if you know, if you've been on volunteering for any length of time, you know who it is. It's not me. He sits down. I want to get better at this. That's why I'm preaching about it. It's not for you. It's for me. Roger Graber. How many of you guys in this room have gotten a thank you note from Roger Graber? Look. Oh, this turned south. That escalated quickly. All right. Crossed. Never get anything. Well, I'm going to tell him to write you one. I don't even know what you do, but you're going to get one. You made the sermon better. So that's the idea. And I know all of a sudden this kind of sounds like a business talk or a leadership seminar, but this is what Jesus is talking about. And by the way, that Jesus didn't just teach about it, did he? He took the weight of the church on himself, and so we ought to model that. He said to us, you know, he moved into our life and he said, "I'm going to serve you." That sounds weird. It feels weird. But how can we work that into our reality tomorrow? Here are a few ways that you can change the culture where you work. Even if you're not the point leader, you probably lead some people. The first thing to do is to ask, let me read this quote because it's too good not to read. Level 5 leaders embody a paradoxical mix of personal humility This is Jim Collins in Good to Great. And professional will. They're ambitious, to be sure, but ambitious first and foremost for the company, not for themselves. They want whatever the goal or the vision to succeed, to win the day. And they're willing to push and prod and lead and challenge, but they're also doing it with a humility. So how do you do that? How do I do that? Because I fail at leadership sometimes, even though I want to succeed. Number one, I want you to suggest that you do this. Ask this question. What can I do to help? How many of you guys would pass out if your boss came to you and that was his question? What can I do to help you? In other words, what you're saying is, how can I loan me to you for your benefit? How can I loan my gifts, my talents, my resources, because I've got some, because you're my direct report, or you're somebody that's further down the line or further up the line, if you're looking at it like Frank Blake looks at it. How can I help you? How can I push your project forward? How can I lend my expertise to you? What can I do to help? And if you think about it, isn't that what God did? Look down there at humanity. We were broken. We were sinful. And he asked the question, what can I do to help? And he answered our question by sending Jesus to die on the cross and thereby served us in a way that we could never serve ourselves. What can I do? And if you hear that and you're like me, you're thinking, if I start asking that question, that's a never-ending list of things. And so you never start, because you can't do for everybody what you do for one person. And that's what everyone always says. If we do it for one, we got to do it for everybody. So no. And that gives us the quick excuse to say no. But that's a myth. Frank Blake didn't write thank you notes to everybody in his organization. No, he wrote 100 every Sunday to people in his organization. You do for one what you wish you could do for everyone. It's symbolic leadership, but it matters. Look for opportunities in your leadership to do for one what you wish you could do for everybody, because you get paralyzed really quickly if you think, I got to do this for everybody. No, you know what? You even follow Jesus. He didn't heal everybody. He didn't talk to everybody. He didn't see everybody face to face. He didn't meet with everybody. You know what he did? He did what in his limited ability that he could do, and you might say limited, but look up Philippians 2. He actually limited himself to space and time. He could only walk, you know, and there were just things that he did not do that we are called as the church to do, but we can only do it for who we can do it for. So do for one what you wish you could do for everybody. Look for those opportunities to serve the way Jesus served. And leverage your authority for the benefit of those people under your authority. That's the bottom line. And I actually think that organizations, divisions, and departments led by Jesus followers ought to be the most productive, efficient, nimble, focused, healthy, profitable organizations in the country. And I think people should be standing in line to start working for those organizations, to get into those organizations. They might say, you know, I don't know about following Jesus. I might not want to be a Jesus follower, but man, I sure want to work for one. Those people, they get it. They get it. And then you'll have the opportunity as those people come in to work with you to first model for them what it looks like to be a Jesus follower, and then maybe introduce them to the reason that you do things the way you do. I don't want to be a Jesus follower, but I want to work for one. It's like they really care about people. Here's the obstacle. If you and I are going to do this, we got to confront something that's pretty big. We got to confront our ego. You have to confront your ego, because if you see your staff as the supporting cast for your career, here's what you ought to do. You ought to call a conference and tell them that. You ought to say, listen, here's the bottom line. All of you guys exist for me. And then they can go on somewhere else. They brush up their resume. Because they don't exist to propel your career. They've got things that they're thinking right now about their own lives. And we have the opportunity and the leverage as a leader to come alongside them. Don't waste your life trying to build a name for yourself. Because unless you're a U.S. president or a serial killer, no one's going to be talking about you 5 years from the time you die, right? Your family maybe, but then give them 5 more years and they won't be talking about you anymore. You guys are shocked and not laughing, but that's okay with me. It's still true. It's still true. And if you're trying to make a name for yourself and you're working for your glory, ask yourself this question: am I big enough? Am I a big enough name to spend my entire life working for? That's too small a thing to give your life to. Work and live for the glory of the one whose name is above every other name. Work and live for the glory of Jesus, who's invited you to follow. The disciples, as immature as they were, and as the fact that they didn't get it, they got this. And they leveraged their authority for the people who were following them. And the church exploded, and it's global, and we're here because of them. And we still know their names. Mark, at the very end of this story, he quotes Peter. The whole book of Mark was probably Mark interviewing Peter, because Mark wasn't one of the disciples. He wasn't one who hung out with Jesus. But he probably interviewed Peter here, and he puts a little commentary here at the end, and it removes any excuse that you may have, whether you're a leader or not in your life, because you've always got people who are reporting to you in some way. They may be waiting on your table, or they may be, you know, just someone who's directing you where to go. You may be your kids. There's always people that you're pouring your life into. And this takes away your excuse. And he turns the whole thing upside down, and he gives himself as an example. Mark 10:45. For even the Son of Man, that's Jesus, came not to be served, but to serve others and to give his life as a ransom for many. That's Jesus. He didn't just teach it. He was actually on his way to do it, and he accomplished it. He served you and he served me. He did something for us. He leveraged his authority to do for us what we couldn't do for ourselves. Did you know that? Salvation is available to you not based on whether you're good, but based on whether you believe that Jesus is who he says he is, that he can do what he says he can do. It's a gift that Jesus used his authority over life and death and sin and all of that to give to you. And that's why we follow him. This is huge. You're following Jesus is not a one day a week thing. Let's connect Sunday to Monday, our theology to our work day, our theory to reality. And if we do that, guys, I think it's revolutionary. Think about what it would do for where you work. And you might be saying, oh, if only my boss were here. Send them the link. But also use it in your own life. Ask yourself the question. Ask people around you, what can I do to help? I'm going to lend you me for you. And I'm not going to get paralyzed by that. I can't do it for everybody. I'm going to do what Jesus did when he was walking the planet. I'm going to do for one what I wish I could do for everybody. And we'll overhear people saying, hopefully, I may not want to be a follower of Jesus, but I want to work for one, or I want to work on that team because there's Jesus followers over there, or I want to be in that study group, or I want to get close to them. Leverage your authority for the benefit of those under your authority. I know it seems really highly practical, but for me, everything is spiritual. And when we do this, it changes things in real time. It changes things with people who don't even, they're not here, they're not thinking about God, they're not thinking about any of that, but it really genuinely changes the culture because we're bringing the kingdom of God, his reality, into your world. Leverage your authority for the benefit of those under your authority. Let's do that, and let's continue to do it, and it's revolutionary.